I love the sound of breaking glass. J'espère que vous êtes bien à notre écoute. Notre lunchtime en anglais continue avec la chronique Breaking Glass de Dennis Bro. I need the noises of destruction.
Bro on the Global Television Beat, and today's episode is Bad Banks, Global Misbehavior in the German Financial System. Most presciently these days, with the outbreak of the coronavirus and the collapse of the markets, the German powerhouse series Bad Banks opened its first season with a run on Germany's third largest bank. Equally prescient was the opening of season 3 of the other powerhouse German series, Babylon Berlin, which begins with a 29 stock market crash and has the lead detective stumbling down the stairs of a bank amid suicides and bills fluttering from the ceiling before he opens the door and is trampled by those stampeding to get their money back. Season 1 of Bad Banks depicted the mad speculation of Deutsche Invest prior to the 2008 subprime crisis as Jenna Leekum, the young financial climber, and her two colleagues managed to abscond with a couple million dollars, which they stowed in a Caribbean account while Jenna's boss, Gabriel Fenger, went to jail for insider trading. In Season 2, now streaming on Hulu, Deutsche Invest, under scrutiny but expanding, has become Global Invest, with the bank now interested in merging itself with a budding startup culture and industry in what it calls fintech. Jenna is dispatched from the corporate headquarters of Frankfurt, the financial center, to Berlin, the center of the startup and tech industry. She is the emissary, as the bank wants to take over a startup whose goal is to help investors participate in sustainable development, a sort of greenwashing app, which nevertheless could do some good. The free-flowing atmosphere of the startup, more playroom and gym than business, is transformed by the bank into the more formal cubicles of what it calls ominously the incubator. Fenger, Jenna's ex-lover, returns from a short stay in prison and launches his own startup. His is an app that simply expands investment at whatever is most profitable, jettisoning the sustainable development component. Deutsche Global sides with Fenger and orders Jenna to disband the startup with which she has been working. She complies sadly but efficiently and returns time and again to the owner and financier of the former startup, looking for forgiveness and clemency, which he will not grant her. Indeed, the second season focuses more on the personal character of the three young bankers and the duplicity necessary for their survival in the world of high finance. Jenna and her partner Adam, trying to cover their theft of funds in season 1, end up as accomplices to a murder in order to keep their secret from the prying eyes of Jenna's banker elder, Christelle LeBlanc, who wants to use the information to control her. Adam, meanwhile, falls prey at home to the intensity and violence that works quite well in investment circles, as his wife cloisters herself and their children from his brutal temper. Tao Huang, one of the few non-Caucasians connected with the bank, betrays both of them, and they equally violently dismiss her. If the young bankers are loathsome but energetic, their elders are worse. Jenna flaunts the power of youth, telling Christelle that she has 40 years left in the business, while Christelle has at most 10. Christelle reacts with a series of behind-the-back moves to again keep Jenna under her thumb, including an alliance with Fenger, which results in the jettisoning of the Sustainable Development app. At the same time, one of the heads of the bank covers up the death of a sadistic older government regulator by the sex worker they had assigned to pacify him after the regulator had attacked her. The dark and shadowy palette that engulfs this world, even in daytime, strengthens the mood of ominousness that surrounds these financial activities. Bad Banks is the antithesis of more superficial American series about wealth creation, such as Billions and Secession, which amount to nothing more than wealth porn. This series, about the financial center at the heart of the European Union, details a professional and personal landscape bereft of morality, which has turned that union into a money-grubbing entity that puts the rich first. The series presents even its young protagonist as riddled with a kind of greed, ambition, and drive for power at all costs that is responsible for destroying the possibility of a Europe united for a common good that could help to steer the world in a progressive direction. Nancy drooling. There's a worrisome change going on in one of the better teen shows this season, Nancy Drew. The pilot presented a now young adult Nancy, just graduated from high school, mourning the death of her mother by pancreatic cancer, suspicious of her lawyer father, who was a high-priced cleaner for the richest family in town, and sleeping with an African-American ex-con. This was truly a Nancy Drew toughened up for the neoliberal age, with her parents either victimized by chemical pollution or servants of the rich, and with Nick, her boyfriend, proving to be much nicer than the wealthy scion of the richest family, Ryan Hudson. Hudson is revealed to be crudely exploitative when, in a Twin Peaks moment, in the pilot finale, the adult Hudson is shown having an affair with Georgia, or George, Fan, Nancy's teen rival in high school and currently her boss. So far, so good. And the daunting 22-week schedule still revolves around the cold case murder of a high school girl, though the whodunit seems to be shifting away from the power centers of the town, in contrast to Nancy's progenitor, Veronica Mars. 22 episodes, the requirement of a network series, is harder now in the era of serial TV, when each show can no longer just be a witty way of repackaging the material, but must relate to each other's show, and where relationships must be more fluid and changing. That said, though, the changes in this show are disturbing. Nancy's path is now being normalized. That is, her journey and aspects of the case itself are moving her from an outsider status into the center of power of the town, while all the while denigrating those on the outside. She has slowly dropped her African-American boyfriend, Nick, to tentatively begin a relationship with the scion of the second wealthiest family in the town. Her father's character has now switched over from deceitful, shady lawyer to innocent, caring dad, waylaid by Nancy's too eager pursuit of the killer of the dead girl. The actual killer in the first murder was revealed at the midpoint in the series to be a working-class character out for revenge on the wealthy. Also, on the relationship front, the Asian owner of the restaurant, George, is now aligned with the African-American Nick. Likes finally attract, or in the CW network's gender and racial politics, dominance attract, and minorities are left to pair off with each other. Nor is this the only show to follow this pattern. Stumptown, one of the better of this season's series, which often deals intelligently and caringly with female issues, has the alcoholic private detective and lead character Dex Parrios at first dating and sleeping with an African-American cop, Miles Hoffman. She then shuts that relationship down, claiming it's unprofessional, in what seems a flimsy excuse for getting rid of him. Miles then finds his way to the female Asian cop with whom he works. The same pattern was followed in the Canadian series of a few seasons ago, Shoot the Messenger, where the young, red-headed female reporter is shown in the opening scene having sex with a black cop, but then instead sleeps with a Caucasian older reporter assigned to assist her in her story. In that series, though, she finds her way back to her original love interest. We used to have the character change in lead characters being from that of a wily or somewhat ruthless character to that of a character who finds their moral path. Best example is the detective in Chinatown, who once again tries to help someone in need after ruthlessly preying upon his clients. In these series, the disturbing trend is a movement from a somewhat outsider status to one of stricter conformity. Redemption comes not from refinding a moral code, but from reestablishing more traditional power relations. Such is life in an era where each is left to fend for themselves and greed rules. This is Bro on the Global Television Beat. Oh, change of mind,
sound of breaking glass. Dennis Bro is the author of Film Noir, American Workers and Postwar Hollywood, Class Crime and International Film Noir, and Maverick or How the West Was Lost. Is Hyper-Industrialism and Television Seriality the End of Leisure and the Birth of the Binge? C'était Breaking Glass de Dennis Bro sur Art District. Très bonne suite de nos programmes, jazzistiques et artistiques, à notre écoute. Sound of Breaking Glass.